welcome to one and all. Welcome to What's Cooking with me, Sue Hadfield. Yes, we're back after a much longer than planned for break, but I hope I find you all well and ready to sit back, keep me company and enjoy today's show. We have a full programme as usual, so let's get started and ask what's cooking. Christmas is just around the corner. Oh yes it is, like it or lump it. And for those of you who celebrate this festive season, now is a good time to make those all-important Christmas puddings. And the earlier you can make these, really, the better. Christmas pudding, or rather plum pudding, dates back to the Middle Ages, but was originally a Christmas porridge called frumenti, which contained wheat or corn, which was boiled in milk. Over the years, other ingredients were added, such as dried plums or prunes, eggs and meat, and it became known as the plum pudding. Then, during the 11th century, when spices including cinnamon, cloves and nutmeg were introduced to Europe from the Middle East, these were also added to the pudding, probably originally as a sign of wealth. Although the recipe evolved further over hundreds of years, with ingredients being added and taken away, it was only established as an essential Christmas food in the 1800s when Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert's love of it, made it fashionable throughout the country. Now, there are many traditions associated with Christmas pudding, and here are just a few of them. It should be made with 13 ingredients to represent Jesus and his disciples. It is traditionally made 5 weeks before Christmas, on or after the Sunday before Advent. That day was often deemed Stir Up Sunday, and each family member or child in the household added coins to the pudding mix and took it in turns to stir the pudding with a wooden spoon, making a wish as they stirred. Whoever gets a coin in their portion on Christmas Day will have their wish come true. A sprig of holly is often used to decorate the top of the pudding to represent the crown of thorns worn by Jesus on the cross. So, how is Christmas pudding made? What does it contain? Well, funnily enough, I'm going to tell you. And this is just one recipe of many that are around for Christmas pudding. If you've got the basic ingredients, then you can add or not add what you like. For this recipe, you will need 350 grams, 12 and a quarter ounces sultanas, 350 grams, 12 and a quarter ounces raisins or currants, 150 grams, 5 and a quarter ounces dried figs chopped, 125 grams, 4 and a half ounces candied peel, 100 grams, 3 and a half ounces dried apricots, 75 grams, 2 and a half ounces dark glacé cherries halved, 150 ml, that's 5 fluid ounces brandy, 100 grams, 3 and a half ounces ginger in syrup chopped plus 2 tablespoons of the syrup, 2 apples or quinces grated, 2 oranges, and actually you only want the juice and zest of these, 6 eggs beaten, 250 grams, 8 and 3 quarter ounces shredded suet, 350 grams, 12 and a quarter ounces soft muscovado sugar, 250 grams, 8 and 3 quarter ounces fresh breadcrumbs, 175 grams, 6 and a quarter ounces self-raising flour, 1 teaspoon mixed spice, 2 old sixpences or coins optional. You will also need 2 1.5 litre or 2 1/2 pint plastic pudding basins with lids. And
this is what you do.
1. Soak the sultanas, raisins, currants, figs, peel, apricots and cherries in the brandy overnight, giving it a good stir now and again. 2. The following day, in a large bowl, mix the ginger, syrup, apples or quinces, orange juice and zest with the eggs, suet, sugar, crumbs and flour. Stir in the soaked fruit and spice. 3. Butter the 2 pudding basins and divide the mix between them. Add coins now if using. 4. Cut 2 circles of greaseproof paper to cover the top of the pudding and fold a pleat down the centre to allow the pudding to expand. Put lids on the basins and steam the puddings for 3.5 hours. Let the puddings cool before removing the greaseproof paper and cover tightly with cling film and lid. The puddings can now be stored in a cool, dry place until Christmas. To reheat, steam the puddings for a further 3.5 hours, turn out and flame with brandy. Of course, not everyone likes Christmas pudding, not everyone likes the fruit and the spices all mixed together, etc. So, for those of you who want something different, here's a little alternative.
Puddings are something we need to talk about because your chocolate roulade has been looking at me now since about 9:45. This is a good alternative to the Christmas pudding that not everybody really likes. How do you go about making this one, Mary?
Well, I made it yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's one of the favourites that I make and everybody seems to like it. It's a fairly classic recipe, and I use plain chocolate in it, and I don't use an expensive plain chocolate. I use one about 38%.
So that's really not one of the expensive ones, is it?
Well, no. Well, I find it isn't quite the consistency I want, and sometimes it's a little bit sharp.
Mm.
And so I make it with 175 grams of plain chocolate, 175 grams of caster sugar, 6 eggs, and a couple of tablespoonfuls of cocoa. Now, the cocoa stabilises it because it has no flour in. And so you make a meringue to start with, just whipping the egg whites, lift that out of the mixing bowl, because you do need an electric mixer. Then you put the eggs and the sugar, and you beat it until it's nice and thick. And you melt the chocolate slowly. You don't get it too hot. And then you pour the chocolate into the yolks that have now foamy with the sugar. Then you fold in the egg
whites. Now, is that the dangerous bit where it could all go wrong?
It shouldn't go wrong at all. It is easier to add quite a big dollop of the whisked egg whites into that mixture so that it slackens it down.
Yeah.
And then you just fold it all together. And it's quite quick to make.
Yes, I mean,
put
you
it
say
in
that.
A big roasting tin, in a large, about 13x9 Swiss roll tin.
Yeah.
You could even do it in your roasting tin. Tricky part is rolling, and I didn't think I'd do it here because it might make a mess of this beautiful studio.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
Studio.
Beautiful studio.
So I've rolled it up so it's a nice spiral, and when you're rolling it up,
yes,
having spread it with whipped cream, about half a pint, make a real cut at the end and roll it like a Catherine wheel. And then look at it, it's all cracked. It should be cracked. A little bit of icing sugar over the top there.
Yes, it is a thing of absolute beauty, that. And you're just putting a little sprig of holly on the top. We're going to have to take a photograph, a tweet pic, I think, of that at the end of the programme to put out on Twitter. Can I just have a tiny slice? I mean,
of course you can.
Appetite
we mustn't forget that mulled wine. I haven't put the...
No, don't worry, I'm looking for a slug of that as well.
Was it a small piece?
Well, relatively small. Now, the roulade is predictably delicious, Mary, so thank you very much.
If you notice, I trimmed off the ends because Paul, my husband, was in the kitchen yesterday morning and he said, "Where's that going?" And so I did trim off the ends so he could taste it.
He's had some.
Just to tidy the ends, and he said, "Well, can I have some more cream with it?"
You say your poor husband. How many men do you think would swap places with your husband? There must be all the well-fed men in the country. Here's right on cue. Here's my glass of mulled wine. Now, there isn't any brandy in this, is there?
But you...
Oh, there is.
I just
brief, Mary. I have responsibilities.
No, it was not a lot of brandy. I should think the half a teaspoon, because that's just one glass.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Has that warmed you up?
It has.
Another very popular tradition, of course, is the Christmas cake. The Christmas cake, as we know it today, comes from two customs which became one around 1870 in Victorian England. Originally, there was a porridge, the origins of which go back to the beginning of Christianity. Then there was a fine cake made with the finest milled wheat flour. This was baked only in the great houses, as not many people had ovens back in the 14th century. Originally, people used to eat a sort of porridge on Christmas Eve. It was a dish to line the stomach after a day's fasting, which people used to observe for Christmas Eve, or the vigil, as it was called long ago. Gradually, they began to put spices, dried fruits, and honey, etc., in the porridge to make it a special dish for Christmas. Much later, it was turned into a pudding, and because it got to be so stiff with all the fruits and things, they would tie it in a cloth and dunk it into a large cauldron of boiling water and boil it for many hours. This turned into Christmas pudding. Later, around the 16th century, it became popular to add butter, replace the oatmeal with wheat flour, add eggs to hold it together better. This became boiled plum cake. So boiled plum pudding and boiled fruit cake existed side by side, depending on which ingredients the housewife used. Only big houses had proper ovens to bake in. In the castles and fine homes, people would make a special cake for Easter, which was a rich fruit cake recipe with a topping of what we now call marzipan or almond paste. A similar cake was baked for the Christmas festivities, but whereas the Easter one was a plain cake with almonds, the Christmas one had dried fruits in season and spices. These represented the exotic spices of the East and the gifts of the wise men. Such things were first brought to Europe and Britain, particularly by the Crusaders coming back from the wars in the Holy Land in the 12th century. But it was still not a Christmas cake, but a Twelfth Night cake. Twelfth Night is on the 5th of January and has been for centuries the traditional last day of the Christmas season. It was a time for having a great feast, and the cake was an essential part of the festivities. This was slightly different in different countries and also at different social levels. In the great houses, into the cake was baked a dried bean and a pea, one in one half and the other in the other half. The cake was decorated with sugar, like our icing, but not so dense, and ornamentation. As the visitors arrived, they were given a piece of cake, ladies from the left and gentlemen from the right-hand side. Whoever got the bean became king of the revels for the night, and everyone had to do as he said. The lady was his queen for the evening. In smaller homes, the cake was a simple fruit cake with a bean in it, which was given to guests during the 12 days of Christmas. Whoever got the bean was supposed to be a kind of guardian angel for that family for the year. So it was an important task, and usually it was arranged that a senior member of the family would get the bean. This was observed until recently in Poland, in fact. In Britain, the cake was baked as part of the refreshments offered to the priest and his entourage, who would visit on the Feast of Epiphany, January the 6th, to bless each house in the parish. This custom died out after the Reformation in the late 16th century. In Mallorca, the main island of the Spanish Balearics Islands, they have a similar custom, which takes place at Easter. The festive cake in Britain was revived at the end of the 17th century and became very much part of the Twelfth Night partying again. It's recorded in royal households, that the cakes became extravagantly large and the guests divided into two sides could have a battle with models on the cake. One battle was a sea battle, and there were miniature water cannon on the cake, which really worked. The confectioners who made the cakes were left with boxes full of figurines and models for the Twelfth Night cakes, and also had lost revenue by the banning of the feast. So they began to bake a fruit cake and decorate it with snowy scenes, or even flower gardens and Italian romantic ruins. These they sold not only for the 5th of January, but for December Christmas parties. And it was thus that we developed the Christmas cake. People in Britain began to make the boiled fruit cake to send to their families who had gone to the New World colonies in Australia, Canada, etc., and to send to those who worked on the missions. The boiled cakes lasted better than the baked ones, and in those days of the 19th century, they could take many weeks or months even to cross the world by ship. These cakes were usually sent as part of a Christmas hamper of food and presents, and this way the tradition of Christmas cake, often eaten with a piece of cheese or apple pie, became known all over the world. So, that's the story of the Christmas cake. Christmas cakes, I think, traditionally made a month or so before Christmas, earlier if you can. But here's a recipe for a Christmas cake that can be made just a week or so before Christmas.
Now, it's Cook the Perfect Christmas Cake today with the country's best young baker, 26-year-old Ed Kimber, who's from Thackley in West Yorkshire. Your Christmas cake is a little bit different, isn't it, Ed? Just tell us a bit about it.
It's a little bit different in that it's not got any black treacle in, so it's not a very heavy, dark Christmas cake. It's almost kind of similar to a Dundee cake in that it's slightly lighter and more blonde in colour.
More blonde.
Yes.
Okay, that's always a good thing. Well, depending on your point of view. So it's nice and light, and the colour will be very significantly different.
Yes.
And does it take a load of preparation?
No, I mean, it's not one of those cakes that you have to make months ahead. My mother, whose recipe this is, sometimes you're too busy and wouldn't make it.
Like the way you say bless her, my mother, she's probably about my age.
She is, she's in her 60s.
Oh, okay. She's not. Anyway, carry on.
And she would sometimes be too busy, so she would make it, a week before Christmas, and it's absolutely fine. An aged cake.
Okay, that's really interesting, because some people will think, well, they shouldn't be doing Christmas cake now, we should have done it weeks ago, but this one you can do any time you like.
Yeah, I mean, you can make it, ahead of time and feed it with alcohol if you prefer, but we've always done it very, very last minute and it's absolutely fine.
Feed it with alcohol. Just take us through that.
Once you've made the cake, what you can do is you can then skewer it with, just a skewer, and then every now and again just pour a little bit of brandy or sherry or whatever alcohol you prefer over the cake just to make it a bit more boozy.
On the finished cake?
Yes, on the finished cake, just to give it a bit more alcoholic hit, if you like.
So effectively you're watering it, but with brandy or whatever.
Yeah, basically you're just giving it a bit more moisture and a bit more kind of Christmas boozy taste.
Take us through your baking years then. You're only very young. I mean, when was your first big baking experience?
One of my first memories is baking mince pies with my mum at Christmas. I remember cutting out pastry with her, and it was one of the first things we ever did, so it sticks in my mind as the first thing I learned to make is mince pies. It's very, very nice, apt memory for today.
Yeah, it is. It fits in really well. And she encouraged you to bake, taught you to bake. What was it?
I would say that she was definitely the person who got me my start. She taught me everything she knew. So the first things I remember making were mince pies and scones and Christmas cake and, very simple, traditional things.
Yeah.
And I think the book reflects that in certain ways. There are some very old-fashioned family recipes that have got my kind of twist on.
Yeah, when was the tipping point? When did you start teaching your mother?
She would say it was a few years ago when I'd finished university and I wanted to I wanted to teach myself to bake properly, like more advanced. So not proper, that sounds terrible.
Sharpening.
Sorry, Mum. No, I meant more in a kind of broad
professional
way.
Yeah, is in a professional what, way. Is what you mean. Yeah, okay, and how do the two approaches differ then? What is the difference between a professional baker and a great home baker?
Well, I think the main difference was the fact that I was teaching myself a vast variety of things. So rather than just, you know, Victoria sponges and very simple old-fashioned British things, I wanted to teach myself as much as I could. So I would learn as many different recipes a week, a month that I could. So I was baking very different things to learn new techniques, new ideas, and just trying to expand my knowledge base.
And you've taught your mum how to make...
Well, it's quite funny because now that the book is out, my mum will call me and go, I'm trying to make your recipe. What does this mean? How do I do this? So yeah. It's definitely hopefully inspired her to get back in the kitchen again and do more baking again.
Yeah, come on, mother.
Yes.
So whilst we've been chatting, you're doing your mixing. Yep. What stage are you at now?
We have creamed the butter and the sugar, and I'm just adding in the eggs a little bit at a time. And then we have a mixture of plain flour and ground almonds. So the ground almonds will help keep the cake moist for a long time. Because they're a nut, so they're quite moist anyway. And then what we can do is take out the eggshell I've just dropped in.
I'm glad that happens to other people.
Yeah. And then we will add in the fruit, which has been soaked overnight only in some brandy and with some orange and lemon zest. So if you wanted, you could use whichever kind of alcohol you prefer, so rum, sherry. We've always used brandy just because it seems the classical choice for me.
Yeah, should you just stick to one sort of alcohol? Can you mix?
You could do a mix, but I think it'd probably get a bit too confused in there. So the alcohol's not going to be the strongest flavour in this cake. It's going to be the fruit, so you don't want to kind of overpower it too much. I'd leave it fairly simple and straightforward.
And you're quite traditional in your approach to the fruit, then?
Yes, the fruit is just a mixture of sultanas, raisins and currants with mixed
cherries.
Peel. I would use the glacé cherries that's in the recipe.
Yeah.
This is one of the recipes that hasn't been touched. It's been left word for word as my Nana wrote it years ago. Although, to be fair, it was one of the recipes that was never written down. So I had to get my mum to make it, and then I would write it down. I was like, stop, let's weigh this out. So we knew exactly what it was, because she didn't know it kind of as a written method.
How proud would your Nana be of the fact that you are now making her cake?
She would be very, very proud. Unfortunately, she passed away when I was very, very young. So the recipes that I have of hers are kind of the only thing of hers I have. So I wanted to put them in the book as a kind of paying respect to them, because her baking heritage plays a big part in our family.
Yeah.
It's a very kind of... It's our family tradition, and it's woven through our family history kind of thing. So it was the thing I wanted to do to make sure it was... They're paying respect to them.
No, I think that's absolutely great. So you're mixing up now, and let's see, what you've got everything in there except the fruit.
Except the fruit. So we've got the cake mixture, which is just a very standard kind of cake mixture. It would be very similar to a lot of older cake recipes. You know, it's equal sugar, butter, and then a mixture of flour and ground almonds. There's no rising agents in there because it's a dense, you know, cake. But there is some spices in there to give it that kind of Christmas feel. And then the fruit has the booze in it and some orange and lemon zest to give it a bit of brightness.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of fruit in there.
Timing is everything. So please, can we hear about how long this goes in the oven and at what temperature?
Now, I'm going to forget my recipe now at this point. It goes in for about 3 hours, and it goes in at a slightly higher temperature to start with, which I think, if I'm remembering rightly, is 300 Fahrenheit.
Hang on, I've got your book
you
on the floor.
The book somewhere. There, yeah,
no, I have, yes.
Because this is one of the cakes I only make once a year, I do. I'm terrible, I don't remember it.
All right, sound of woman nervously leafing through book. here we go. The following day, preheat the oven to 150. I think we're going to have to go to the web. Now, when I tweeted about this last night, Ed,
yep.
I may be old, but I can tweet. a couple of people asked, is it possible to make individual Christmas cakes, almost like little fairy cakes?
Yeah, you could. You could. You can buy a product which is like metal, straight metal rings, and I would bake them in there because they will have nicer sides. If you bake them in a muffin tin, they're going to look like cupcakes, and you don't want a Christmas cake to look like a cupcake, I don't think. I think it needs straight sides. So you can buy these kind of tins with very, very straight kind of tubular shapes, and they would bake fine in there. You'd have to experiment with the timings and things, because obviously it's a different issue, but it wouldn't not work. It would be absolutely fine. You just have to get your timings right.
I'm now going to give you a recipe for Stollen. This is a typical German Christmas cake. For this recipe, you will need the following. 500 grams raisins, 100 grams currants, 100 grams candied lemon peel, 100 grams candied orange peel, 250 grams chopped almonds, 3 packs vanilla sugar, 6 tablespoons of rum, 12 drops of bitter almond flavouring or 40 grams bitter almond finely ground, 1 kilogram wheat flour, 84 grams fresh yeast, 150 grams sugar, 250 ml milk, 2 egg yolks, 700 grams butter, 125 grams icing sugar to decorate the stollen, 15 grams salt, 1 lemon untreated, and
this is what you do.
1. Mix raisins, currants, candied peel, almonds, 2 packs vanilla sugar, zest and juice of the lemon and rum. Let mixture rest for 6 hours or overnight. 2. Sieve flour into a bowl. Make a well in the centre and pour the crumbled yeast, a tablespoon of sugar and the lukewarm milk into the centre and mix with a little bit of flour. Lay a tea towel or dishcloth over the bowl and let this rise for 15 minutes in a warm room. 3. Add the remaining sugar, salt, egg yolks, 400 grams of butter in knobs. Knead into dough. In case you are using a food processor, knead for 30 minutes on the lowest level. Then let the dough rise for 30 minutes covered with a tea towel or dish towel. 4. Roll dough. Add fruit mixture. Knead dough quickly and let it rise for 30 minutes while being covered. Knead again. Shape the dough into a rough oval form 3 to 4 centimetres thick. Fold dough in half lengthwise and put it on a baking tray. Let the dough rise for 15 minutes. 5. Preheat the oven to 175 degrees C. Bake for 80 minutes without air circulation or foil on a rack in the lowest third of the oven. 6. Immediately after baking, pierce stollen all over with a wooden needle and brush it on the top and underneath with 150 grams of brown melted butter. And then cover the top with powdered sugar with a sieve. Let it cool down overnight. 7. Let the stollen rest for 1 or 2 weeks, tightly wrapped in foil and plastic bags, in a cool place, but not in the fridge. And that should be ready just in time for Christmas. If you'd like to contact the programme with questions, comments, feedback, recipes, ideas you may have for future shows, you can do so by emailing cookin@theglobalvoice.info. That's cookin@theglobalvoice.info. To download or to listen to this programme again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery, or you can visit incx.org, where you can subscribe to the What's Cooking podcast. Well, time has beaten us, and that really is all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have, and that you will join me next month. Until then, this is Sue Hadfield saying, take care of yourselves and each other, and as always, happy cooking!